Hello, good evening. Hello, if you're driving. Hello, if you're listening at home. Hello, if you're serving a custodial sentence and you just want to go home. And hello, if you're a cowboy with a transistor radio in one hand and the reins of a barking bronco in the other, in a late night rodeo, yeah.
This is Radio 4, and you're listening to Hearing with Hegley.
So we move straight away into the poetry. It's called Pancake Man. Pancake Man. He's Shrove Tuesday's number one fan. All those minds simultaneously mixed up in the flour and the batter, making the matter more powerful. Pancake Man, he believes that a shared experience is greater than the sum of its ingredients. Pancake Man, the world is his frying pan, and he is a bit of a toss-up. a little limerick. My fortune was told me in Barrow by someone called Old Madam Tarot. She said, danger is near. It was lucky to hear, because I ducked and avoided an arrow. But Old Madam Tarot wasn't quite so fortunate. There you are. This is called The Halo and the Dozy Dozen. The Lord was born without sin, but not without his thin, flat halo. The wise men, they were reverent. The shepherds, they were coarser. That shiny floating hat, said one, it's like a flying saucer. In his last years, the Lord would regularly cast his halo into the wilderness as part of his dog's exercise regime. And he once tried to amuse his disciples by holding it like a steering wheel. What is it, boys? A bus or a car? But we don't know what buses or cars are, Lord, answered his bewildered team. And the Lord set his dog unto them. Rex. They have a dog. It is lost. They are offering a reward. It is more than the dog cost. They can afford it. They are second century Romans. And they want their dog back. It is part of their homes. It is a black one. It eats sticks. It is six. They have described it on a notice. It is nailed to a tree. The notice, not the dog, hopefully. Right, this next poem is about my own existence. And this appears in this book here, Glad to Wear Glasses, Glad to Have Ears. When I was 7 or 8 years old, I was in love with a girl called Jane, and I felt unable to show my love. I was the 7th best fighter in the class and thought that if I were to talk about love, I would be wimping out, really. So instead of telling Jane that I loved her, I would kick her. And I would kick her on the ankle. I would just try and just nick her on the ankle bone. So it wasn't mindless violence. It was quite carefully thought out. And this situation continued until Wojtek came onto the scene, and Wojtek would say to Jane, oh, your hair looks really beautiful, your work is really neat, which she preferred to being kicked on the ankle. And something grew inside me which I didn't understand. I understand it now. It was jealousy, and I didn't know how to deal with jealousy because J stood for jelly in our school, not jealousy, which doesn't really help you. And so I thought, well, rather than discuss this matter at school, I'll talk about it at home in a more secure environment. So I went home and I talked about it at the dinner table, and I said, look, I'm in love with a girl at school, and there's a boy who's in love with her, and they seem to be working out something together, and it's not causing me great happiness, everyone. And my mum smacked me for talking with my plate full, and I said, surely it's with your mouth full, mum. And she said, oh yeah, sorry. And my sister started crying because she thought I was in love with her and was deeply hurt deep inside her own self. And so I didn't really work it out at home. And I went into school the next day, and in the playground I saw Jane and Wojtek snogging in the playground. And I thought, I've got to deal with this. I've got to do something in the school environment to sort this out for myself. And so this is a poem I wrote about that situation and the strategy I used to deal with the situation. This is called Jane and Wojtek. When I saw Jane and Wojtek kiss, I was jealous of their bliss, and I reported them to Miss. It's very nice that you clap, because nobody clapped when I told on them in class. It's very therapeutic for me, so thank you very much indeed. Thank you. It's nice of you to give in that fashion, to love in that way. After I told on them, Miss called them out and caned them because she'd said that kissing was dirty. She obviously had a few problems of her own. And she really laid into them. She really hurt them, actually. It was really, really nice to see. It was very, very warming. Very warming thing to see. Very therapeutic, very nice, very lovely feelings. And then she called me out and caned me for telling them that. And at the end of the school day, I went up to the school gate and I felt this tugging on my jacket, and it wasn't me doing it. And I was pulled around like that and punched in the mouth really hard. My lip bled, and it was Jane. And she said, Why did you tell on Wojtek and me? Why did you do that? And I said, because I love you. I didn't dare tell you before that I love you, but I want to say it now. I don't know what else to say. I love you. I loved you all the time. I loved you all the time when I was kicking you, and I just didn't understand my emotions, and I loved you, and I love you. And then she hit me again. And she said, if you love me, why aren't you glad that somebody else was making me happy? Got a bit confused at that point. This is a story about a later love in my life. And so Nigel will come in when it gets a bit lutiny in the story, won't you, Nigel? Yep. He's not equity, he's not speaking. You get more money if you do, though, Nigel. He doesn't care about money. At 14... I was enamoured with a girl in another class, and an opportunity to make her aware of my feelings was provided by the annual third-year discotheque. I hadn't been to one before, being as you were only in the third year once, and it was an annual event. But knowing that she was going meant that my attendance was compulsory, even though I was an isolated boy, detested by many. I asked my dad what he thought I should wear, and he immediately advised my school uniform, reasoning that I had no other clothing. Arriving at the function, I felt like a fool, seeing everybody else in their casual cool, but I was brightened by the sight of the one who drove me to drool. There was also a boy in the room whom I yearned for, but kids in those days were fascists where sexual politics were concerned. And I spurned my unfashionable feeling, revealing only my yearning for the girl. Our twirl together was a predictably poor piece of choreography, and I'm sure that she was only doing it because I promised that if she did this one dance with me, I would never bother her again. I was shortly to find a different input for my love and output for my passion in the shape of Luton Town Football Club. And our dream of promotion from the fourth division. My involvement with the team also provided my first successful amorous encounter with the boy I'd been frightened to approach in the discotheque. It was on the coach back from the away match at Hartlepool. Away from home and also away from the aggressive rigidity of the other boys, we chatted and batted our eyelashes, and coming back I nestled deep into his soft mum-made jumper and dropped into a sleep. When the coach stopped, I got up, sad to be back, but happy to have experienced such happiness only to discover that we were only at the motorway services near Derby and there was still a load more snuggling to be had with the lad. And I glowed on the road, inwardly rootin' and tootin', going back to my abode in Luton, oblivious to the uselessness of our centre-forward shootin'. This is a poem about my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law is the kind of bloke who likes to stop and ask hitchhikers where they're going and then tell them that he'll get there first. He's as miserable as sin, but not as interesting. He's as open as the pub is at 4:20 in the morning when it's been shut for a decade or more. My brother-in-law, he's to be avoided. Like getting very heavily hemorrhoided. We move on now to a song about amoeba moving up the evolutionary scale from my brother-in-law. Hello, amoeba. I wish you were my pet, but you're not really big enough to be seen by the vet. You're a little blob of jelly, you've got no skin and bone. You're not a boy, you're not a girl, and you're not on the telephone. You're in another world, I cannot get in touch with you. I cannot pull your leg. You look a little bit like a fried egg. You're a long way down the ladder that evolution trod, but you can eat with your feet, or to be more discreet, obtain food with your pseudopod. And you don't have to have a partner to start a family. You can multiply by dividing.
Tra-la-la-la-lee.
You don't get up in the morning because you never go to bed. You've not got any genitalia, but you've got other bits instead. You're not heterosexual, bisexual, lesbian or gay, but you seem to do okay. It isn't rude to be an amoeba in the nude, is it? Aye. All together! Amoeba, 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 amoeba. Come on now!
Amoeba, 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 amoeba.
You're not so simple.
You little protoplasmic
pimple. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Your appreciation. Keith Moore on the double bass. Susan Norton on the flute. Nigel on lute and guitar. Production by Phil Clark. Give it up.